So in 1970, I was a 10-year-old girl with a crush on a 23rd century space explorer and his intellectual sidekick. Every Friday night, my family and I would sit around our television and watch Star Trek, which by that time was already in reruns, but I had no way of knowing that, nor would it have made any difference to me. I was a teeny bopper in love with the captain and science officer of the Starship Enterprise. Captain James Tiberius Kirk, shiny and buff and rugged and quick-witted, I thought he was the best thing on television. And as he swashbuckled his way through every episode, I imagined myself being the swooning starlet of the week. From my pre-adolescent point of view, Mr. Spock, his dark, brooding, and brilliant first officer, had plenty of sex appeal of his very own. His deadpan, I cannot tell a lie demeanor had me absolutely captivated. And to this day, I have had no shortage of swashbuckling, brooding, brilliant men committed to saving the world from itself, sweeping me off my feet in the process. No space travelers yet, but there's still time. Now, being 10, I didn't know the back rub to the series. I didn't know about the creator, Gene Roddenberry, or his vision for a colorblind society and the opposition that he faced from the networks of that era. I didn't know that the kiss between Kirk and his beautiful, badass, brown-skinned, Swahili-speaking communications officer, Lieutenant Uhura, would reverberate throughout the galaxy as the first ever TV kiss between a white man and a black woman. I didn't know that to portray women and quote-unquote minorities on television as physicians, scientists, planetary rulers, and military officers was unusual, to say the least, and in some states, if not criminal, was at least enough to keep the show off the air. It all felt absolutely normal to me, and it still does. And in fact, right now, a picture of the original Enterprise crew hangs on my bedroom wall. I'm a lifelong Trekkie. I've watched every episode more times than I could possibly count. But that's not really what I came to talk about today. Clearly, you didn't gather here to hear me gush about my childhood crush on two fictional television characters. The truth is, I was fairly surprised myself when this sermon dropped into my consciousness. These days, I've been thinking a lot about humanity, and maybe you have too. With all that is going on in the world, I think it makes sense that we would be thinking about our fate as a species. I've also been thinking quite a bit about evolution. And two questions that have resonated with me recently are, how did we get here? And will we ever evolve beyond where we are right now? To be clear, I have, like many of us, a love-hate relationship with human beings, such that I am not beyond escaping into a futuristic science fiction fantasy where the ills of the world have been done away with, and every person, every living thing, every natural element is not only surviving, but thriving, and recognized as necessary to the well-being of everyone and everything else. I really want that world to be real. The adage says, if you can see it, you can be it. For many women and people of color, Star Trek was the catalyst for careers in science and space exploration that might never have happened. And for all of us, Star Trek and stories like it suggest that we are capable of so much more than our current reality suggests. For sure, one of the reasons the TV series became a dynasty was because it not only tapped into our imaginations about the future of humanity, but it also extolled the power of some of the most vulnerable aspects of our humanity. Even at the tender age of 10, watching Roddenberry's stories unfold, I could see the tenderness of the human spirit being portrayed on the screen. I saw the wounded healer, the doubtful warrior, the decision maker forced to decide between the good of the many and the good of the few, or the one. The struggles waged on screen between good and evil, life and death, love and hate, grace and revenge, fear and kindness. We all saw Roddenberry's vision of a transformed society unbound by racism, classism, poverty, and oppression play out on our screens. As I got older, I understood that Roddenberry intended Star Trek to inspire us to be better human beings, to stop fighting with each other, and start living together in a benevolent society. We are still waiting for that to happen. But that doesn't mean it can't happen. In an article appearing in a 2016 issue of Inc. magazine, entrepreneur and author Kevin Baum celebrated the 50th year of the Star Trek franchise by assembling what he called 21 Gene Roddenberry quotes that inspire a great future. In the article, Baum describes Roddenberry as a humanist, a believer in human potential, an advocate for social equality, scientific progress, and a resolute optimist about the future of the species. Among the 21 quotes, he includes these, which I'll just read as a paragraph. If man is to survive, he will have learned to take a delight in the essential differences between men and between cultures. He will learn that differences in ideas and attitudes are a delight, part of life's exciting variety, not something to fear. Star Trek was an attempt to say that humanity will reach maturity and wisdom on the day that it begins not just to tolerate, but take a special delight in differences and ideas and differences in life forms. If we cannot actually learn to enjoy those small differences, to take a positive delight in those small differences between our own kind here on this planet, then we do not deserve to go out into space and meet the diversity that is almost certainly out there. To my way of thinking, Star Trek was Roddenberry's vision for a beloved community, a united federation with a mission of benevolence and inclusion, committed to being accountable for personal and communal well-being. Boy, do we need that right now. I'd like us all to imagine that we are standing now together on the bridge of the Enterprise with our fellow human beings all around us from all walks of life. Maybe it's a bridge that's big enough to hold the entire world. All nations, all cultures, all gender identities, each of us bringing our own personal brand of wit and imagination, each with a commitment to do good in the world, to be a benevolent neighbor, and to observe the moral imperative to first do no harm. Standing on the bridge, surrounded by humanity, we look upon the state of the world and wonder what is the right thing to do. How do we be citizens of the world, committed to creating beloved community, knowing we can't solve all the world's problems? How do we do that and still be agents of transformation? Can we be kind? Can we be generous? Can we be loving? Can we include visiting aliens? Can we put ourselves in their place? And can we see ourselves as aliens when we travel outside our own galaxy and not assume ownership? What will it take for us to become a species who is more committed to connecting with our fellow human beings than gaining power over them? What if multiculturalism and cross-racial relationships were considered essential to the good of society, not just by some of us, but by all of us? Of course, Star Trek is a fictional account of a fictional circumstance. Like all of us in this century, those humans weren't perfect either. An on-screen United Federation that supposedly eschewed violence and imperialism regularly engaged in space battles with enemy insurgents. For all of Roddenberry's forward thinking, both the sexualization of women and the portrayal of white males as saviors were staples in the storyline of each and every episode. In that version of the 23rd century, we were transcendent, but only so far as the 60s would allow. It was, after all, a television show that Roddenberry himself described as a space western. Yet and still, the story helps us imagine what might be possible when we overcome our own proclivity for violence and oppression and otherism. What we saw was the best of humanity mixed with the worst of humanity, navigating our frailty, struggling to keep our baser instincts from dictating our relationships. Indeed, as a race, our evolution is not yet complete. Experiencing and uplifting our common humanity and its struggles is the most transcendent thing we can do for each other and for ourselves. In his 2009 book, The Idea of Humanity in a Global Era, the late Bruce Majlis examines the historical relationship between three different dimensions of humanity. Humanity as a species, distinct from other animals due to our power for speech and reasoning and imagination. Humanity as a behavior, which refers to our capacity to develop morals and kindness and be compassionate. And humanity as a global identity, which transcends our other separate individual, cultural, or national identities in favor of a single political identity in which every human has a stake. In a blog post article titled "The Power of Humanity on Being Human Now and in the Future" that expounds on Majlis's work, senior research fellow at the University of Oxford, Dr. Hugo Slim, says this: "The purpose of this single political humanity is to build a we in which can share a common species consciousness as one group sharing a single planetary home, and so work together on common problems and common opportunities that face the whole of humanity." He further points out that this political sense of being a single global group is experiencing pushback today as a broad-based politic of ethnic and economic nationalism expresses its skepticism about globalism. This political turn sees many people asking legislators to think more about us here and less about them over there. As citizens of the world and a faith that declares our independence, as citizens of the world and a faith that declares our interdependence on the web of life connecting us all, we know how important it is to imagine and build a global sense of humanity because our common human problems are intense and can only be solved globally. The author goes on to list what he calls humanity's five perennial problems. The problem of our violence as a species as it plays out terribly in war and violent crime. Our struggle for fairness and our desire to reduce inequalities between us. Our predators and their threat to our health, now mostly microscopic in the form of infectious microbes or chronic and autoimmune diseases. Our relationship with the non-human environment and its impact on human survival. And the Promethean risk of our creativity and how our technological inventions help and harm as they change the world around us and redefine humanity itself. My challenge to each of us this week is to sit with this list. to consider how our human frailty and desire for unity can and must be the driver for a transformed future in which every human has a stake, every life is sacred, and every person holds him or herself accountable for the fate of our planet and its people. Imagine hundreds of years from now, humanity has survived its struggles. It has learned from its mistakes. What will it look like? What will we look like? And how will we have made it to the 23rd century? My other challenge to us is to be optimistic. I, for one, have found it difficult to find any trace of a silver lining in the events unfolding on the world stage at this time. And yet I know that these times, as unfortunate as they are and as painful as they are symptomatic of our evolution. We are an evolving species. Star Trek, for all its positive futurism, tells the story of a human family that pulled itself from the brink of self-destruction in favor of creating a world that works for everyone. I suggest that this imperative has never been more clear. Despite its never having been done, at least not on this planet, it may yet be possible. We must not give up hope that there is indeed still time to go where no man has gone before. In closing, I offer one final quote from the Roddenberry File. I believe in humanity. We are an incredible species. We're still just a child creature. We're still being nasty to each other. And all children go through those phases. We're growing up. We're moving into adolescence now, he says. When we grow up, man, we're going to be something. Thank you, and from Roddenberry, live long and prosper. We have reached the time for comments from the congregation. If anyone would like to share on Zoom or in the sanctuary, please.
Thank you much, Lane. I have, talking about some of my personal history too. Having been born about 8 years before you were, there was a certain psychoactive substance that was not legal at the time, but is now in many states. That was also a part of watching Star Trek for me, delivered in cigarette form. And again, that was also in syndication because I had such poor grades in a large part of high school that I was forbidden to watch TV on weeknights. So after it moved to Friday night, I could watch it. But and also my dad was very unmusical in that he was not into sax and violins on TV so much. So I know he looked somewhat askance at some of the space bimbos that would show up on Star Trek. But to his credit, Bill Shatner had the same complaint. He thought it should be more serious than that. And in the best episodes, it certainly was. In any case, as I don't have to tell you, in Star Trek's future timeline, there is a Third World War. And there is a brief reference to it, I think, by Spock in one of the original series episodes. So maybe things, you could say, in a sense, looking at the world today, are darkest just before the dawn. We can perhaps hope so in a certain sense. We prefer not to go into the darkness if it's not really necessary, and you could say it isn't, but in any case, there it is. One other thing, Next Generation series, Commander Riker was a high school classmate of mine.
Another Trekkie. I think in my case, I've always been a relentless optimist. Gets to be kind of a dirty word, when people see all the terrible things going on. What's wrong with you? Can't you see what's going on? And certainly, if you manage to miss any of it, the news is going to make sure you don't miss it. But it's so easy to see what's wrong, and a bit harder to try to figure out what's right or what could be done about it. I've always said to people who insist on trying to put down my optimism, I can't afford to give up. I have kids. I have to do what I can for them. But Bill, talking about Shatner, who was always a huge self-promoter and still is, he did a documentary entitled How William Shatner Saved the World. And what he did is he went around interviewing people who were inspired by Star Trek and had major influence in our world, like the guy at Bell Labs who invented cell phones and so forth. An optimistic point of view can really help.
Hi. My name is Milena. I was really into the next generation, and my son and I would sit every evening and eat dinner in front of the TV and watch that. And to me, my favorite character was the counselor, the empath, and I saw myself as identified with that character since I was into therapy. But I thought it was wonderful that they had her be equal to all of the other, the engineer and the, first mate and whatever, that understanding people's emotions was up at a level of importance, that she was an equal to all the other important leaders there. What I wanted to speak of is why I did not come up and light a candle for Shatner. I wanted to light a candle for the sorrow of the world, and I thought, there aren't enough candles. My heart has been aching so much that I have curtailed watching the news or hearing news, as if it's like saying, no, you can't come in because you'll destroy me. The pain of knowing how many people are suffering, I think there were always people suffering, and there has always been violence, and there's always been war, but now we see their faces, we hear their stories, and it just is very overwhelming to me, being an empath from the future. It's very overwhelmingly painful. And what I'm trying to learn is how to hold the fear, the anxiety, the love, the compassion, how to grasp it all, because I keep saying, well, what can I do? Well, I can't stop people from having war. I could protest, but that doesn't feel like I just don't know how to transform the pain into something positive. That will make me feel better. And so I guess I would want to light a candle that would light in everybody's heart, because I think we're all suffering, so there's no exclusion from that. So if we could light a candle for the pain in everyone's heart and the desire for peace and goodness and wholeness. Thank you. I appreciate that.
So I grew up at the same time, watched the original series on Sunday night on Channel 4. And I would say that the times were more perilous then. We were involved in the war, and a Cold War as well. And so I think everybody grasped onto that optimistic worldview of Star Trek. And to me, I've kind of held on to that even to the day, that we are headed in that direction. We're going to have a rough ride, but that's where we should be moving to.
Anyone online, some of our Zoomers, would like to comment? Paul, did I see you on mute? No? Okay. So thank you so much, folks.